Welcome to this Sunday's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Dave is back in the studio today with me, back from Montana. Had to help out a buddy up there.
Yeah.
It was probably a nice little break, yeah?
Yeah, it was. It was snowy, lots of snow.
You actually got ice. A taste of winter.
Right. It got a really good taste of winter. We went and looked around for some wolves and such, and the elk had already moved out of that valley.
Basin. Okay.
So there was nothing there. But it was, come back home to Reno, and it's like spring break.
Yeah, you're in a t-shirt. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm not going to start singing the blues quite yet.
No, man. I'm okay with it. But, this traditionally is, if you've been in Reno long enough, you know that this just means potentially the end of January and most of February is going to be it's going to be shovel city.
Well, I hope so, because being a skier and skiing with my family,
that would help.
It's not great right now.
No.
It's not fun.
No, they can't even make it. I mean, realistically.
No, it's melting as fast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 35 degrees at night, colder up there. But yeah, it's melting off so quick. But yeah.
So got a taste of winter. Now you're back. We were just talking about indoor season, archery stuff.
Yeah, indoor archery's happening.
Do you have some of the dates for that stuff?
Yeah, so we've got the Winnemucca 450, the annual 450 out there, which is, ever since they started them, they're so much fun. Such a great club and great shoot. That one's February 7th and 8th. And that's money. That's a money shoot.
Now, here's what I wanted to ask you about on that, though. Uh-huh. What target are you shooting?
That's the Vegas 3 spot.
You just shoot an extra
five ends.
Five ends.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you get flighted in your division. And then the next day, so that'd be the 8th, would be your shoot downs or your shoot offs. And it's you shoot five ends. And if you win, you move on. If you don't, you pack up.
Oh, so you potentially could be shooting 3-4 different rounds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah.
He says, oh,
buddy. Yeah. 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 I think it was last year I shot 3 or 4 rounds before I went to the finals.
Oh, man.
Against the Frickhopper.
Is that what? Yeah.
I think that was last year against the Frick.
I think I'm going to make it out for that one this year. I think I'm going to skip the annual Vegas thing again.
Yeah. Vegas is in March. I mean, that's the beginning of March. So
right.
But then, if you're super diehard, you got the Lancaster Classic in Pennsylvania.
You're going to that.
I'm going to that. That is end of January. Then you've got the Foley, which is the end of February. Foley, Alabama.
Alabama.
So I'll be heading that one too. So that'll be...
And what's
That'll
the one?
Be a good time.
I thought there was one more you were doing.
The Memphis, Tennessee is the national five spot. That's the big five spot target.
Are you still going to do that?
I'm
or
pretty
are you on
sure
the fence?
I'm going to do that one. I'm on the fence with that one because it's like go to Foley, fly home, feed the dogs, kiss the wife, jump on a plane again, and then that next following weekend's Memphis.
And it's Memphis.
And it's Memphis. And then you got the Rushmore Rumble, which happens the beginning of January.
And now state stuff, I saw that they've released the dates for like the state tournament indoor stuff or what's that called?
Yeah, so that is the NFAA. It's a state indoor, like a mail-in.
Championship type
thing. Yeah, state championship for indoor. There's usually several shops will participate all throughout the state. Down in Vegas, you'll have the Aces and Arrows and Impact Archery. And up here, you'll probably have High Desert and possibly Hunt and House.
Okay.
You'll shoot a standard 3-spot round, and you'll also do a 5-spot.
So
one day
both.
Is a 3-spot, next day is a 5-spot. And then you turn your scores in to the Nevada Bowhunters Association, to the president there, to Ashley McDermott or to Brandy Bush.
Okay.
She's a secretary. And then when it's all said and done, there's about a month window to coordinate with your local shop and such that's going to host it. And then there's awards for
rank everybody
and then get awards. So that's always a really nice one because it's a fun little warm up. And then there's also shops that are starting to do leagues.
Right.
Getting ready for indoor. So they're shooting the Lancaster 3-spot, the Vegas 3-spot, the 5-spot. So plenty of opportunity to.
I know Hunt and House is going to start up. They're doing a league right now.
Yeah.
But they're going to start another one in, I think Chandler said January or.
Yeah, something like that. And I think I think it's January because they're going to do the Lancaster 3-spot, which is no different than the Vegas 3-spot, but the Lancaster scoring is an X is an 11
right,
instead of an X.
Well, and it's got that white additional spot. And I'll be honest with you, the first time I shot it, you don't think something like that would goof with you a little bit.
Oh, it does.
But it is weird because it's just kind of sitting there on the edge of your vision. It's like, what? Ah,
yeah.
Focus, focus, focus.
Yeah, it does mess with you. But the only time that they use that dot,
right,
the bottom dot, is for shoot-offs.
The finals.
The finals, and it's worth 12 points. So, you know, you have to hit the button saying you're going for
Call it,
and then you go for it. So, yeah, and when you're just doing leagues, you're not, I mean, I wish there was a way we can incorporate that into it, like, you know,
you can call it during regular rounds,
right,
or something.
You know, if you call it, that'll give you 12 to, you know, boost. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's a cool one. The Lancaster's cool. It's just a three spot, but they just have a different scoring system. You can shoot a 330.
That'd be a perfect score.
A perfect score would be a 330.
Right.
Yeah, because they don't count X's.
Just 11s.
Just 11s. Anyway.
So, hey, that's indoor archery stuff going on right now in the state. We are going to pick up where we left off before your trip to Montana, carrying on with the Wildlife Conservation or Conservation in the West series. Now, this episode might be a little more dry, but it's the politics episode.
Yeah.
Politics. State versus federal, the funding, all of that stuff. And because of your day job, I think this is going to be super interesting for me because I live in that world of idealism where I'm like, well, why doesn't this work this way?
Right.
Because I don't see that back end of stuff that you probably deal with where it's like, well, because of this federal thing, the state cannot do this, or because of this, that, here's how the funding breaks down.
Yeah. I'll try my best to answer those. So. Yeah, no, the money one we'll try to get through because money, that's just, that can get pretty boring, you know, but how we're going to do it is the first, you know, we're going to do a segment here, which is just going to be the federal and the state, their issues, you know, their complications. And then we'll get into the little bit of the money talk, and then we'll get into public perception with politics in relation to wildlife conservation and how those two can kind of create, at times, can create some real rough waters for states to implement and get things,
I bet,
get things done.
Yeah.
When you've got, you know, the public perception of, like, the urban people, the city dwellers, as we call them.
Right.
People that, like, just look out there and look at the mountains, and that's about as far as they go.
Yes.
And then, but they've got a gazillion, opinions on how to address wildlife.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly some drawbacks to a government of the people type thing, where it's like they get a voice too, and hey, it's fair enough. Yeah. But I'm going to start off on the deep end. And
boom.
I'm going to put you on the spot right away.
Right off the get-go, huh?
And here's...
Where's the bourbon?
Here's the deal. We live in a state, and why I love Nevada and why I choose to stay here and live here, raise a family here, because we are such a public land heavy state.
The biggest.
The biggest, right? Yeah. Outside of Alaska.
Well, yeah.
Lower 48.
Yeah.
But how does that impact management in the state of Nevada, because we're what, like 80% federally owned?
Yeah, like 83%.
Federally owned.
Federal public land.
So do they just get the majority of the say, or how does that balance work?
So it kind of depends on the topic or the situation.
Okay.
When it comes to wildlife, a lot of the federal partners, Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management, then you also have, like, you know, federal parks and national parks and a couple other entities in there. When it comes to wildlife, they actually, at least in the state of Nevada, they've been very cooperative. There's a good rapport there in relation to getting some of the wildlife issues addressed or programs kind of implemented to some degree. But when it comes to land as a whole, and there's, say, a lithium facility or a transmission line or wind energy or solar or anything like that starts coming along, it gets a lot more complicated due to existing regulations in relation to, say, like renewables or infrastructure improvements and stuff, where, you know, wildlife can definitely go to the back burner because of economic reasons or political reasons or growth reasons. Wildlife sometimes doesn't really play much of a part when it comes to things like that. It's
okay.
You know.
But when it comes to managing the wildlife, there's a pretty good established relationship there where there's not a lot of back and forth tug of war.
Yeah, no, there can definitely be plenty of tug of war. The thing is, they're open to the conversation.
Oh, okay.
They're not shutting things down like, nope, we don't care about the widget worm, you know, whatever the world is. You know, pick your animal. And then there's the importance of it. Like, if is it a major migratory corridor for animals, you know, elk, deer, antelope, what have you, or is it a species that is threatened, endangered? You know, a lot of things come into play when you're addressing wildlife conservation.
Right.
So is it state protected? Is it federally protected? Is it on the BLM and Forest Service list for conservation priorities? So there's a lot of moving parts. Finding a good path through all of that, all of those weeds and things can be a struggle, but it's well worth it, especially when you've got a agency or partners that are willing to listen. You know, there's other states that have a lot more of a difficult time with that because of, you know, one thing is limited public land.
Right.
So when renewable energy stuff comes along, it's like, hey, man, this is the only spot we can let them do it.
And that's why I bring up Nevada specifically, just because of our public land here. It seems like it would be headache inducing at times, but I don't know how the process works.
I mean, it can be, like I said, it can be. There are situations where both sides can get really bullheaded, and both sides have great arguments, have great research and a lot of science-based stuff. That's not the only thing. Sometimes that political, or not only political view, but also the public perception thing kicks in. And, you know, then you've got the protesting and you got the 8,000 letters and all of this stuff. Then you've got
attorneys,
to bring, right. Yeah. Then you've got to bring that into the mix because they've got it's public land. They have a right to say what they want to say and support what they want. So then that comes in. So it becomes a pretty nasty bowl of oatmeal.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We will continue on conservation across the West when we come back on Nevada Backcountry, sponsored by Shooting Performance Institute. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, sponsored by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. And we're going to jump right back into episode 3 of Conservation in the West, and we're dealing with the political angle this show. So everything from federal versus state control, as you heard Dave and I getting into their last segment when it comes to a state like Nevada. But I mean, conflicts between conservation, resource extraction, that's the big one I see in the state of Nevada as far as the mining industry here.
Yeah, that definitely plays a very large role in the policies, big time. So, like, one of the first things that everyone always asks, and I did a little search on this, and it is overwhelming searches, who actually owns the land? Because a lot of folks see, especially now with this administration wanting to sell off this land.
Right.
And, you know, as hunters and outdoors people, we're like, absolutely not. This is public land. You just can't go selling it.
Right.
So the big question is, who actually owns it? Federal government right now manages, not owns, manages roughly half of all the land in the western United States.
Okay.
Which is pretty fat. But Nevada being 83% of that is huge. If they do decide to start selling off land, Nevada's going to get a serious
short end of the stick, I'm sure.
Big time. Yeah. But so going through this, you know, look at
your notes. I'll bring up something real quick. And this, in fact, my dad and I are sometimes at odds on this stuff because there is the political ideals, right? Where essentially a federal government should own nothing.
Correct.
So I get that, but then it's also that thing where it's like, well, is that your hill you're going to die on? Do you want to just, I get it. I understand the concept and the ideals there.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's reality in what we have. So I find myself kind of waffling back and forth sometimes where I'll say stuff like federally owned land. Now, is it technically federally owned? That's kind of a gray, murky area because you and I own it.
Yeah.
Realistically.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, people in New York own it. Yeah. People all over the country, whoever's paying taxes owns it. So
the big kicker is the word manage.
And I like, yeah, manage sounds much better.
Yeah.
And for if we have the expectation that the federal government is going to manage it, yeah, okay, I get it. It's a screw up, I guess, but you could call it federally owned. It's yeah, not, but it's if not. They're managing it, semantics.
So, semantics. So as residents, we have given the federal government that management authority
right.
to take care of it as needed.
And the expectation and that they do.
That they do it, yeah. You know, how we would like to see it. Well, the problem is there's, what, you know, 300 million of us on this in the United States, and we all right. have at least yeah. 100 million different views on it. So yeah. it comes down to that whole management. Like we, like the state of Nevada, the Department of Wildlife, the state manages wildlife. We manage a component of the federal lands, which would be the wildlife side of it. We work with federal agencies who manage the land itself, which is the habitat. So you've got this gotcha. Mix and match and marry and dating component where there's a lot of entities that have a say how all of this is carried out. So okay. it can be very nebulous at times, yeah. depending on the situation. If it's, like we were saying earlier, like endangered animals, or if it's renewable energy, or if it's mining or grazing or what have you. By being a taxpayer, we've given them the authority to make those decisions for us, and sometimes it really chaps our hide. So the conversation on who owns the land is still up for debate.
Yeah, it's a subject for another
yeah,
day.
Is yeah, is it technically, yeah. like we were saying, is it owned, or is it just a managed land? So, but that's kind of what I had found over the big old interweb.
You said something a second ago, Dave, uh-oh. And man, we might go deep on this one.
Geez.
A state like Nevada, where I would say our most precious resource is water.
Oh,
or
God,
the scarcity of water,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
That's the big thing in the state of Nevada. So if the federal government is in charge of managing the land, the actual physical land, does that, like the water scarcity issue, does that fall mostly under like federal guidelines? Or does the state have some sort of say in that as well?
Well, the state has a say-so in it as well, because you have this, the state, the water authority.
Okay.
So there is, so there, that's again, another
component.
Another component of it where you have the federal agencies that have jurisdiction and responsibilities over a certain portion, but then they have to communicate with the water authorities in Reno,
wherever,
and Vega,
yeah.
wherever it might be, that manage the water for the communities and the
municipalities, yeah.
So, you know, dealing with that. So, again, you've got that tug of war, how to address it. You know, the Lake Mead, that was all federal. I mean, that
right.
was a big federal
right.
project in the long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about some of those waterways, Colorado River, all this
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah, Snake that, River, all of that.
That share boundaries with multiple states and this, that, and the other thing. So I could look at that having, or the federal government kind of throwing their weight around when it comes to managing that, going, well, this is an interstate waterway. We have to be involved in this versus, let's take Lahontan, for instance, or something.
Yes.
I would look at Lahontan as being more like, no, this is what the state says we do with this and how we manage it.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, but that does. That
anyway, so the water issue, when you said that the federal government manages the actual like physical land,
yeah.
I went, man, in Nevada, the water thing.
No, yeah. I mean, we're not only mainly owned by the feds, we also are the driest state in the country. So
yeah.
it really plays a nasty part. Another thing we can dive into here is on my list here for feds versus state
mm-hmm.
is the predator management and the local the state tends to support more of a flexible approach to where it's managed to address like livestock losses and community safety concerns.
Okay.
Is where the state kind of feels with that, where federal agencies, they try to maintain stable populations. So fulfilling like their national conservation mandates. That is where you have another basically roadblock.
How so?
Well, because they're... So let's take the wolves, for example.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Wolves are really have an effect on ranchers, you know, killing cattle and killing the young of the year, that kind of stuff, and the sheep and everything else.
Right, right.
Well, it's against the law in some places to kill a wolf. You know,
I'm unless, tracking that. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Unless you have possibly specific permits that probably are ridiculously difficult to acquire because the federal government has placed them there to regain that population that was once lost. And nothing really is going to go on until those populations are stable. are stable and basically creating their own young and expanding.
Right.
So until that really occurs, no bueno.
Yeah, you can't do anything.
State would be like, no. This is public safety issues. This is, you know, economic issue for the landowners.
Right.
You know, all of those elements. So there's those struggles when it comes to fed to state.
Well, okay. And you bring up the wolves. I think about like grizzlies in Idaho.
Yeah. That's
where now
one,
they're
yeah.
moving farther and farther and south. They're like the grizzlies are doing phenomenal in
yeah.
Idaho.
Yeah.
And same thing. You can't do anything about it. And it's like, oh man, these yeah. things are getting out of hand. I see what you mean by roadblock now.
Yeah.
I tend to think more along the lines of, when it comes to predator management, the science is so strong for managing predators
yes.
and how to manage them that I think, well, this shouldn't be something we disagree on. But I see when you get into areas like the wolf or the grizzly, there are going to be those cases where it's like, oh, no, this is a federally protected species. You can't do anything about
yeah.
it. Meanwhile, the local rancher's pulling his hair out going, give me a break, man.
Yeah, I just lost 3 more cattle today.
Yeah.
Each is $5,000.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it's food off his table and shelter for his family. So it's,
okay.
There's different ways of looking at it. So there's one. And also like the Endangered Species Act. You know,
right.
everyone's like, hey, man, if it's endangered, you know, everybody's on the same playing
page,
field.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the feds, their protections can restrict like grazing and hunting and energy production and all of that, where the state sometimes pushes for a delisting of animals
mm-hmm.
within their state. If their states, they want control of their state, which I tend to agree with.
Yeah,
you know,
me
if,
too.
If,
yeah.
if that particular animal, say, endangered in Missouri, but it's doing great in other states, why are those states being restricted?
You yes, know, what's, yes.
So there's that battle that goes on in relation to that. It's like, well, you know, you're limiting us, but we have like god-awful amount of them. Good example is the bald eagle. I know everyone's like, don't touch the bald eagle, man. That's our bird.
Yeah. They're way overpopulated.
In Alaska, they're considered garbage birds.
Yeah.
Because if you go to out here, you go to the dump in Reno here.
There's seagulls.
Just gulls are everywhere.
Yeah.
That's how eagles are in Alaska. I mean,
yeah.
Ebi, our buddy up there, Ebi, he sent us pictures before. Like there's yeah. 300-400 bald eagles in the
everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of those scenarios where then you have other states like, hey, man, we have 4 nesting pairs. Oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And up there, they're like, dude, you want
yeah.
some?
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
drink these
we'll
things.
Ship them.
Yeah, we'll ship them wherever you
yeah.
want. So, you know, so there's those conflicts as well that occur.
Speaking of this overabundance of something, I think one of the deadliest years on record for grizzly attacks in either Montana or Wyoming, I forget which one now.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But there's a push now that's getting some steam to delist the grizzly in one of those states because they've had so many attacks at this point,
huh.
and the population is just doing so well.
Yeah,
where,
and I'm not
I can't,
sure which one that is.
I'll have to look. I just read an article like, I don't know, a month ago or so, and it was either Montana or Wyoming. Moving on. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's a good one because I'm trying to remember what state that was. I do remember reading something about the grizzly attack, the bear issues in some states where, but I can't remember.
It's been the one of those two. It's been the deadliest year on record. So anyway, hey, we got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com. Click on the podcast tab. All the past episodes are available there. And thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms right here in Reno for sponsoring the show. We kind of got sidebarred there on that last segment, Dave. There was a kind of a conclusion point you wanted to make after that.
Yeah, I mean, to sum all of it up for that first segment there, federal agencies and state agencies is, to sum it all up, basically,
okay.
Federal agencies manage most of the lands, which is makes sense, but they are more focused on a broader ecological and national kind of conservation approach or goals. Our states kind of push for greater control of their own state to address like local economic needs, the predator management issues that come up, and like the community concerns that come up. So the feds are doing the big 30 thousand foot approach. Like
right,
this is
right.
federally what's important, and these are our goals on a federal basis
across multiple states.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, across multiple states and habitats and animals that only live here but don't even exist anywhere near the West. And so they put this very broad umbrella over the whole thing, which makes sense because they're federal. I mean, if they wanted to get down nitty gritty, it would be a state issue. So in the right. states, you're like, hey, let us deal with what our state needs.
What's right in front of us and what's, we deal with every day.
Yeah, yeah. And we have experts and people in the field dealing with this daily. So okay. I would say that is probably the biggest tug of war between the feds and the state are those
management kind of control.
Management control okay. and directives and goals.
What so. About the funding stuff, though? Because that to me seems like almost equal to that control aspect would be some of the funding issues and how that gets divvied up or spread out from the federal government to then the states.
How they divvy the funds up?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so if they have a project, I'm spitballing here and you're the expert on
yeah.
this, but let's say there's a project, right? And they say, hey, we've allocated $10 million to this species across this area. Well, then I can imagine the tug of war then from this state saying, well, we have more of that species. We should get 8 of that 10 million, you know, and the back and forth, one state saying, well, no, hold on a sec. It's a bigger issue here. Even though we have less overall, they're causing more harm, whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
And that is a good point because that is kind of how it does play out at times is that, you know, when there are funds for, say, it's a species on the list and hypothetically, Nevada's only got 2% of the population and the bulk of them are in Montana, Wyoming, and
Idaho
or
wherever.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, it wouldn't be distributed evenly. That wouldn't okay. make any sense because the states that do have more land coverage of that particular animal would probably need more funds to cover that larger piece of land. If Nevada's got really suitable land, but there aren't, the animal just haven't moved into that particular stuff, then you have an argument to maybe pull a little bit more money off of the funding table because you're like, hey,
yeah.
you know, we could do a reintroduction program because we have X amount of hectares or acres that are totally suitable for this particular animal, but there's none in there, you know,
right.
because of these factors. So if we do this, so it really plays into that kind of a framework. But yeah, usually if there's more concern in other states, they would get the bulk of the funding.
Okay.
So, and there's lots of their state wildlife grant funds, which the feds provide to all the states. And for the last, ever since I've been in the field, there have been these programs to increase funding to every state we got here, all
okay.
50 of them. Those have always ended up getting kind of kiboshed. You know, they
why?
Just don't go anywhere. Well, that's a good question. A lot of us don't know why. So increasing certain taxes on certain things, the people that owned Cabela's and Bass Pro Shop and REI and all of those, they were all in support of these particular programs. But they started out as, they rename it every so often, CARA Light, the Blue Ribbon Panel. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. This last time, right before COVID, we mm-hmm. thought that it was going to finally get passed. I mean, the states had so many senators and congressmen and women were like totally in support of it. And then COVID hit. And then it just
died on the vine.
It just yeah. disappeared because so many other things came up. So it's slowly trying to gain momentum again. But that would provide a significant amount of funding to the states
okay.
for particular projects. So each state has to have what's called a wildlife action plan.
Okay.
A state wildlife action plan.
Per species
or
just
the whole state.
Overall,
it covers every,
yeah,
macro level. It covers all of the habitats in your state, all the species of conservation priority, you know, everything. The whole.
How many freaking pages is that thing?
It's huge. It's
yeah.
it's enormous.
Okay.
It's a very big document. But you have to have it in order to have federal funding.
Gotcha.
Because your funding has to be tied to it. So when you report on it at the end of the year, they know that you're spending the funds, you know, adequately. But,
okay.
you know, a big thing with funding across the table is, so like the state of Nevada, a good portion of our funds comes from hunting and fishing licenses and permits.
Okay.
So, but that revenue has been declining, you know, in certain states. And Nevada's been pretty stable. And at times it seems to be a little bit better because of we've kind of changed how we go about our system, with our new systems and later deadline dates and stuff like that have drawn more applications.
Could I interject for just a second?
Yeah.
That seems like it would be a nightmare in states like Arizona, where you have to pay for the tags when you apply.
Yeah.
And then you get a refund later. So there, you're going to have this moving target where it's like, hey, we're flush right now until tags come out. We're just going to sit on this money. Oh, now we got to refund all this stuff.
Well, so Nevada used to do that too. Years ago, you'd have to send a check in with your hunting license fee and all your tag fees.
Right.
So you could end up be sending in a pretty fat, it's a couple hundred dollars, $600, $700, $800, $900 check.
Yeah.
That just sits in the account. So that does have a benefit because for those few months that you're waiting for your draw results to happen, this money is sitting in an account.
You're not blowing
it's just
it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not sitting in a savings account. It's probably sitting in some account that's drawing a significant
interest. Yeah.
So they'll pull that interest off of that, and that's their money.
Right.
So when they pay you back your X amount of dollars minus all your predator fees and all your other fees, they're still sitting on a pretty
chunk
decent
of interest.
Chunk
yeah.
of interest. So, we don't do that any longer. Not our state, but other states. And they, you got Idaho, who's got Jesus criminy. I just was trying to look at that. Forget
it. I'm not unraveling Idaho. No. But my point being, with like the funding thing, in those states that don't do it the way Nevada does it now, when they have you pay up front like that, it seems like it would be an absolute nightmare trying to allocate funds and figure out what exactly you're actually going to have at the end of it.
Yeah, it's all projections.
Right,
You're going off of your previous several years and saying, okay, we're projecting to get X amount of dollars for this year based on our previous years.
Right.
So then they can create a budget off of that. But then, like in the state of Nevada, the Department of Wildlife pulls about 1-3% from the general fund, which is like nothing. It's
yeah.
a couple $100,000. That's literally it. And then the rest is all revenue, fishing license, hunting license, whatever it might
be. Yeah.
And then our federal funds. So through our programming, we get federal funds for managing our huntable animals, our non-game animals, raptors, small mammals, things like that. And then your habitats, and then law enforcement, and then conservation education and outreach. So funds come in from them for that. But those funds really fluctuate based on, for one, like administration.
Yeah.
The administration that's in place, that can bounce around a bit. So sometimes it's a real hit or miss kind of a deal. So
what about these like conservation groups?
So like private funding and nonprofits, mm-hmm. so their sources allow flexibility by project specifics.
A reseeding thing in this mountain range
correct.
Or whatever.
Correct,
yeah.
correct. So those nonprofits can come into play when you've got larger projects that need, a lot more help. So like NEPA projects or like you said, like reseeding projects.
The DU project out there in Stillwater.
Right. So those help out that way. And then there's other funding that can come into play because you have your nonprofit funding. You got like NBU provides a significant amount of money, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, DU, Waterfowl Association, on and on and on and on and on. All provide funding with the potential of acquiring match funds, which then you can go and acquire more federal funds. So you need
it's
an entire army. Well, you need an entire army of people that know money and know how to dash it because all of this money comes with restriction.
Oh, I bet.
So,
I bet
you can't do certain things with it or you can do certain things. So in years where you have a situation where you have the consequences of underfunding situations, in those deals, if it happens for a year or two, it's generally not too horrible. I mean, you're not going to see any kind of major issue with the species specific.
Okay.
You could see a bigger issue, like especially in Nevada with habitats, because we can't really determine like what's going to burn this year.
Good
kind
point.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
So if you have a nice big burn and then we also have a drop in funding, so we need to, agencies need to figure out how to reallocate their funds to keep certain things moving, kind of like keeping the heart beating. Well, if those habitat projects get delayed, then, as we all know in Nevada, thistle and cheatgrass are just going to take
over. There's a window
over.
You've got to hit.
There's a very strict window. So there are consequences to getting underfunded, and sometimes states don't know their funding till the last minute from the feds.
Okay.
So that really throws a wrench in it. There's not a it's not a consistent amount. It's not like every year Nevada gets this much.
If you had to put a breakdown and just like spitball with me for a second, if you had to say like, okay, in the state of Nevada for conservation stuff, wildlife, what percentages are each of those categories as far as like federal, state, and private? Is it a bulk of federal funding?
It's a bulk of our
50% or more.
It's probably more.
Okay. And
then between that and our license sales and permitting for the state of Nevada is the bulk. I mean, you're talking, that's probably, I mean, I don't know the numbers because that would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
But that's the bulk of the funds.
Okay.
And then match funds and funds from Guzzler builds and stuff like that, that sometimes private families like do a memorial to their dad or grandpa.
The
or
Means their mom. Family. Yeah, the you know, Guzzler we built was for the Means family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those types of things, and where you can use the time spent in the field as volunteers, as match funds to acquire more federal funds for other projects. So there's it is like a Jenga, like crazy Jenga.
So it wouldn't be outlandish for me to think like, okay, of all of the funds in Nevada used over the course of a year, maybe 70% federal, 20% state, 10% private.
Something along those lines. Okay. If I was just to throw it a dart at the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not asking you to be accurate. Oh, dude, I'm just asking you to throw it.
No. You ain't getting that, guaranteed. every department and division has their own fiscal services, and there's a reason for that. If they left the funding up to the field folks and the supervisors, and man,
it would be in a world of hurt.
You'd have shoeboxes full of receipts. Like, I don't know what that was for.
All right. Well, hey, I hear the music. We have got to take another break. Coming up, final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show for hunters by hunters. Man, we went down a couple different rabbit holes, ate through a bunch. This conservation topic might grow some legs here and spread into 4 or 5 episodes. But final segment, Dave, where today. Do we want to go for today?
Yeah.
Where do we want to go with this last segment?
Yeah, I mean, we could easily go back to those last few segments and still talk about.
I know.
I mean, there's just chapters on, on all of that. And we're trying to tell folks, hey, we're not going to talk too much on funding. Whatever.
Well, it's a big chunk of it.
It is a huge concern. So right now we're going to kind of, I wouldn't mind hitting the surface of politics and public perception.
Ooh,
so that is a Chuck Norris roundhouse kick kind of an approach when you're mixing politics with public opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets crazy, which most of us see right now with what's going on.
And I'm going to be on my best behavior for this segment.
I wasn't going to say anything. Okay. I figured, well, this is going to get wild.
I'm going to be on my
this
best behavior.
This is going to get wild. Yeah. So public perception plays a very big role in how policies are brought on. When you start dealing with like land use issues and urban wildlife issues, encroachment issues, the public perception is deeply rooted in how states and federal agencies move forward with addressing these things.
Yeah.
So
I'll give you a quick example.
Yeah.
In my wife's friend group, homeschool friend group, so pretty straight-laced crowd.
Yeah.
But there are some that lean on one side of the political aisle that may differ from the way. But it's funny, the perception, right?
Yeah.
For the folks I'm thinking of are strictly suburban, don't venture out that much. But they look at Nevada as like, we could save the world because we have all this land to put solar panels and renewable. And like, why are we not doing this? And then so from my side of the political aisle, I'm like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard of in the world. You're going to destroy the mule deer population, the elk, like everything else, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we're both coming at it from, I think, fairly altruistic angles, but just because of their opinion and how they live their lives, it's like the polar opposite idea of what you and I would have as far as an actual conservation plan.
Right. And so even though the end result may be the same, the way to get to it is completely,
absolutely
different.
Absolutely.
No. So when you're, when we're talking about public perception, there's like two versions.
Okay.
So you've got your urban population, which tends to support like a stronger protection, rewilding efforts, like rewilding animals, and then habitat preservation, unless it messes with their community, and then that's a whole different thing. But yeah, habitat preservation, where the, you've got your rural communities or your rural populations, which, you know, part of the public, which often prioritizes land access, livestock protections and grazing rights, as well as the local economic drivers.
Okay.
You know, because they're pretty much feeding into that economic drive, you know, because of ranchers and farmers and agriculturalists and stuff.
Right.
So totally different. Totally different views. So you've got to deal with those mix into the political side of it. It gets crazy. And then on top of that, now you have your influence from the media and social media messaging components. So we can take bears as a great example for this.
I said I was going to be on my best behavior.
I know, shut up for a minute. So
right,
bears.
Go
so
bears.
You know how Nevada, we have just been getting raked over the coals on the bear issue. You guys are killing so many bears.
Yeah.
You're doing this. You're doing that. I mean, it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And the public picks that up because that's where they get their information. A lot of the urban folks, they're not outdoorsy. They're not going out and about and seeing stuff where your rural people most likely do. So
right,
here's a good caveat. Nevada gets hammered.
Yes.
So California harvested 808 bears in 2024.
That seems small to me.
Well, it does sound small. Nevada, 13. We've only 1 year where we had to stop the hunt because too many sows had been harvested.
Okay.
And not in all the areas, but just in, I think, two or three of the areas, their sow limit had been hit. So they just closed the bear hunt down.
There you go.
There you go. Bada bing,
that's
bada
it.
Bang.
Yeah, that is it. Hey, we are going to have to continue. Do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.